Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So we have a great show coming for you today. Yesterday, I recorded a really, really fun interview with my friend Mark Doyle, went a little bit around Serie A at the top and then focused quite a bit on Atalanta. We haven't spoken about them with a guest so far this season, so we got that going. It's Friday. We had the midweek games. We have more games coming this weekend. So, of course, we have 1,000 names ready for his predictions. But before we get to all that, I am joined, of course, by our dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg, who also runs the fantastic Byline Pod on Chelsea. So, Alex, you know, this has been a rough summer for Serie A as far as, you know, big name players leaving. We covered that at length on this pod, but I do have to say that there is something very intriguing going on in Serie A, because another thing we saw on the market is kind of the lack of these great number nine strikers. Like, your team Chelsea went out and got a great one, but they spent a lot of money, over 100 million, on Lukaku, is fantastic. And there just aren't that many other options on the market. But when you look at Serie A, we really have four really intriguing ones. So I've been thinking a lot about kind of how they compare one to another. One, of course, is your friend Tammy Abraham, scored another goal yesterday for Roma. Then, of course, we have Lautaro, who's been at Inter for a little while, is now a little more responsibility with Lukaku gone. We have Vlahovic, who was one of the big names in Serie A that we were very excited, ended up staying at Fiorentina. And my boy, Osimhen, who I've been incredibly impressed with. So I'm sure fans of other leagues are very intrigued by the possibility of potentially signing these players. I will say we have 30 more games in Serie A. I don't even want to think about that quite yet. So let's just talk a little bit more. How do you rank them? How do you see them once again, one against the other, between Osimhen, Vlahovic, Lautaro, and Tammy Abraham?
Such a good question. So all our players, let's just get this out of the way. Like, all our players that if you're kind of starting a team from scratch and you couldn't maybe afford like the top tier striker, right? And you had to kind of go a step or two below, but like still with someone that could help you now and have promise. Really, all those guys kind of fit in the same group. Like Tammy, Lautaro, Osimhen, Vlahovic. They're all players that if you can't get the top dog strikers and you're kind of starting new, so you want like a younger striker who can help you now and for the long term, they're all around that same level. So that's what makes it a pretty good question. So I'll try and take bias out of it because I'm just so excited with how Tammy's doing at Roma. And I also just kind of want to remember that Lautaro has probably had like the biggest price tag attached to him all this time out of all four of those guys. But I don't feel that he's necessarily done anything to run away from the rest of these guys. Now, I'm not at all saying that he's disappointed or that he's not good anymore or that he's worse than the other three, but like, I felt that Lautaro was almost on this trajectory where, like, he was about to play for the real Barcelona, David, and not whatever version of Barcelona we're seeing right now. Like, he was about to play for the real Barcelona. He was about to catapult almost, not to Neymar levels, because they're different players, obviously. One's a winger, one's more of a striker or a central forward. But like playing with Messi, I thought was going to catapult him even more. And he was just going to be this no-brainer, 100 million minimum price tag player. So he's not there yet. Lautaro is definitely not there yet. Inter's off to an amazing start, and that's without Lukaku. And of course, Lautaro is still a very important player to them. But it's so interesting how I rank Lautaro, because like, is he a guy that can consistently be the lone guy up front in the middle? I know Tammy can. That shouldn't necessarily take away from how I rank Lautaro, though. Osimhen, I share really a lot of the admiration you do with him. He was so good in Ligue 1, and I think it was clear like he would just need a little bit of an adaptation period into Serie A, and now he's just fantastic. And Vlahovic, like, I like what Vlahovic is about. I do. I can't lie. I love that Tammy kind of got the best of him a little while ago when they faced each other. Just that's my bias. But yeah, I like what he's about. I got a lot of confidence in a guy like Vlahovic. I feel like I like his character without even fully knowing his character. Oh, man, David, this is really, really tough. So who would I see? This is how I'm going to answer it. Like, I have a team from scratch, almost like FIFA. I can pick my formation, too. So I can kind of go the direction I might need with any one of these guys. So like I could choose a formation that's perfect for Lautaro. Who would I start off with? Man, you know, Osimhen is like pretty seducing, I gotta say. And that's such a weird word to use. But like he's so fun to watch. He's off to such a good start. He's playing such good football. He's only 22. Do I put him first? No. All right, here's what I got to do. I got to go. Oh, David, this is one of your best questions in a long time, and you asked some really good ones. How do I rank them? Damn. All right, I got to go Lautaro. I do, because you know what? Like, I feel like Lautaro has such skill and quality. He's now pretty experienced for a 24-year-old. Like, you know, he's played in a few different setups with different players, and I feel like if you're letting me kind of start from scratch, which I guess is changing the question a little bit, but hey, it's how I need to rank them. I could pick like the perfect partner for Lautaro. And maybe I would just choose Lukaku for him. But yeah, I got to go Lautaro. And now this is so difficult. This is so difficult. So I'm going to go Osimhen over Tammy. That kills me. That really, really does. Man, I'm going to go Osimhen just because, like, his trajectory is even now a little bit further back than Tammy's, because I guess I'm using against Tammy that he had such a stunted season last season. Even though I think Tammy's going to go on to do huge, huge, huge things, I guess I'd rather just go with the guy that's had, like, the consistent momentum for a season plus rather than Tammy, who had a good season a few seasons ago, then didn't really do much last season, even though he actually did score a lot under Lampard and then was frozen out by Tuchel and now is doing well under Jose. Wow, you can hear me struggling with it. All right, I just got to answer it however I feel. Lautaro, Osimhen, Tammy, Vlahovic. David, I don't even know what to do with that.
Wow. Like,
I don't know what to do with that.
Wow. So
I just absolutely slapped Vlahovic in the face. I really, really did. But you know what? I guess I just have to go with your status quo thing. Like, the status quo didn't change horribly on Lautaro. Like, he's still a player that I think so many teams would take, especially if you put him in the right formation. So I have a feeling, though. This is what I'm confident in. Yours is going to be different.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. Yesterday, because I've been thinking about this question for a while. And originally, I have to say, I didn't really even have Tammy in the mix, but he does belong because he really is an intriguing striker. And I really love a lot of what he does, even when he doesn't score, which, you know, Alex, is one of my favorite things about a striker. But here's the thing. My gut reaction yesterday when I ranked them was Osimhen number one, Vlahovic two, Lautaro three, and then Tammy. And I really thought long and hard on, you know, what's the best thing about them and what would be the biggest drawback. So I think I'm going to change my order a little bit. Now, for me, definitely Osimhen first. And he hasn't accomplished as much as Lautaro in Serie A, but I do think he's the one that has the most potential out of all of these. In Serie A, you know, last season was his first year in a new league. He had injuries and he had COVID. Still scored 10 goals in 24 matches. Now he scored 3 goals in 4 matches with no penalties, which I think is very important to highlight. So far in Serie A, 28 games, 13 goals, no penalties. I think that's a really, really good tally. And I think maybe not as much as Tammy and Lautaro. He really impacts the game a lot also when he doesn't score. I love the Insigne's comparison, and this was at the beginning of last season after they had played maybe 3-4 games together. Insigne said that Osimhen reminded him a lot of Cavani, the way Cavani attacked open space, how, you know, how generous he was in setting up his teammates, even his work rate. And I thought that was a fantastic comparison. Look, Napoli has had some amazing strikers since Cavani, obviously Higuain was the best player in Serie A for a little bit while he was there. But Cavani had really a nice little edge to it. So for me, if you asked me, out of all these players, who has an outside chance of really, really getting in the conversation, maybe even for Ballon d'Or? For me, Osimhen's the one with the highest ceiling out of them all. So I'm going to have him number one. Now, I'm very impressed with Vlahovic. I think Osimhen could absolutely be the main striker. And at the end of the day, how I answer this question is, you know, who could be the main striker on like a super elite club? To me, Osimhen in a couple of years, if he keeps this up, could really start for any club. And I think Vlahovic has that potential as well. He's been on a bad team. So you could look at it two ways. You could say his 24 goals in 42 games, the past two, what he's done last season and this season on Fiorentina, last season where the relegation zone until the end, incredibly impressive. So you could look at it that way. Another way that you could look at it is say, okay, maybe doing it at a big club is not the same thing. I would have bet my house that Kulusevski was going to be a massive hit at Juve based on what he did at Parma. I thought there was a stretch where he was one of the really best players in Serie A, and I thought everything about him, I was like, oh, he's bringing everything that Juve lacked. And I'd be the first to tell you that I'm incredibly disappointed in him there. Now, there's a lot of reasons, but what I'm getting at is there's no guarantee to me that the production that you have on a team that is in the relegation zone, you'll be able to do it on a top team. Now, granted, there's plenty of examples where the opposite is true, but that would be my argument against Vlahovic. But could I see Vlahovic in like 2-3 years being at Real Madrid or PSG or a top PL club as their main striker, as the guy that they expect to lead them in goals? Absolutely. Absolutely. But Lautaro, out of all the people we've talked so far, to me has had the best career. Look, Tammy obviously was at a huge club at Chelsea. I'm sure he's played in a lot of big games, but Lautaro has, both in the Champions League and Serie A, was a very important player for Inter when they won the Scudetto and they made the Europa League final. He also helped kind of transition them away from Icardi. I think the world of Lautaro as a player. To me, him and Osimhen aren't maybe the most clinical finishers, but for some reason, I don't know, man, this is probably bias. I feel like I'm a little more confident that Osimhen is going to become more clinical, but maybe it's because I've seen more of Lautaro. But Lautaro's past 42 games in Serie A has 20 goals, so absolutely nothing to sneeze at, and he did a lot of it with Lukaku scoring a ton. So if I had to go based on their career right now, and Lautaro's also, you know, becoming a player on Argentina, Conte, you know, used them in pretty defensive roles pretty often. There were some games where he really wasn't playing at striker and contributing a lot. So, I've talked myself into Lautaro passing Vlahovic. I do have Tammy last, and it's not bad just because I need to see more. I was a huge fan. You remember, Alex, when all the young Chelsea players were coming up, he was one of the ones right away that I'd started watching, and I was like, this guy's really good. I remember my friend Alex Frasio from Gazzetta dello Sport that we've had on many, many times. His dad's like a great scout, and he really, really knows. And even he's a huge Tammy fan. So I can absolutely see him in this mix. And I have to say, originally, my question was Osimhen, Vlahovic, Lautaro. And then a lot of people are like, hey, you know, Tammy should be in this mix. And I think they are right. So I'm going to go Osimhen, Lautaro, Vlahovic, Tammy. And I will say we are very lucky in Serie A to have these great strikers. That is certainly a lot of fun to watch. Did anything that I say kind of sway you a little bit, Alex, one way or the other, before we get to the next topic?
I think you got me to put Osimhen first, actually. I think after all of that, I think you got me to put Osimhen first. I like Osimhen a lot. I really, really do. It's such a good question, though, because, like, they're all a little bit different from each other. And by the way, like, when you were answering that, I was kind of reminded, even though I put Vlahovic last, I was kind of reminded that when it was decided that Tammy was going to be definitely leaving Chelsea, like when it was clear that Tuchel, no matter who Chelsea got or didn't get over the summer, like even if they couldn't land Haaland or Lukaku, when it was obvious that Tammy was going to be leaving, a lot of Chelsea fans were like, well, the only backup to those guys that we would consider, like meaning a tier down, is Vlahovic.
Yeah.
And now, I'm ranking him below Tammy. Like, what happened here, Alex? So I don't know. I just got to say, I've always said that Serie A is like a really good strikers league. You know, I mean,
it is.
I mean that in multiple ways. Where like maybe not even the best striker can succeed, but then not even an insult to Serie A, strikers can do well in Serie A and then go elsewhere and like. Now they've truly improved their game and they can take the next step. So like, it's a great strikers league for kind of a variety of reasons. And yeah, I mean, that's a really fun group of them right there. All right.
Yeah. And before we move on to the next, just one quick thing, you know, lots been made about the Osimhen price tag, which look was massive, but remember, this was a very interesting deal. Like, yeah, Lille can say they got 70 million for Osimhen because that's what they recorded on the transaction. But as part of that deal, kind of the same Danilo, Cancelo, Pjanic, Arthur somewhat concept, they took four players from Napoli, and one of them was their third string keeper, Carnesis, and then three players from Napoli's youth system. And anyone who knows about Napoli, they know they don't value their youth system hardly at all. These are complete fringe players, and they're making between 20 and 30 million on these four scrub. So Osimhen, in theory, 70 million. So a lot of people are like, well, yeah, he absolutely should be first. Look, basically cost essentially what Haaland's exit clause is going to be next year. But again, remember, there's that other detail on the other transaction. But I actually think Osimhen is on the market very soon. I've said it. My prediction was that at the end of the season, Osimhen's going to be the most valuable player on the transfer market in Serie A. And I stand behind it. I really think that what's going to happen. And you know, Alex, what's really crazy is Napoli have a great track record when they spend big, when they go abroad. And Lozano, the first year, not great in Serie A, has been excellent since. But remember, they really wanted Pepe and ended up at Arsenal, ended up with Osimhen. I think they ended up doing much better off with that one. So, yeah, I'm glad I talked you into him being number one. I think he should be number one, but I totally get why someone would say, hey, Lautaro's done it. And also, it's a great debate. We'll revisit this a few times this season because I think it's an interesting debate.
Yeah. And I said that like this summer, Chelsea fans maybe pondered about Vlahovic. Well, a couple years ago, Chelsea fans pondered about Osimhen before he had moved to Napoli. Yeah. So yeah, I have definitely looked at those guys extensively, really. All right, so David, let's move on now. I honestly can't get over. What's funny is before I even ask you this question, like not that long ago, like maybe one or two episodes ago, you asked me what storyline am I buying and kind of like ranked them. And oh God, I already want to change my mind on like two of them. So I was like, let's chill on Inter. Not saying like they wouldn't be a top four contender, but like a title contender. And could they even be better than last season? I was like, nah, let's pump the brakes. And then they went out and absolutely smashed the team. And I also was like, nah, like Juve will be fine. Like maybe they won't win the Scudetto, but they should have every bit of a chance as everyone else and whatever. And now I look at the table and Juve is 10 points behind. Wait, are they even more than that? They get 5 points. I know Juventus have 5 points, which is obviously not a lot. Yeah, they're 10 behind the top spot. So I got to ask you, who do you think regrets more getting back together, Allegri or Juve?
Yeah, and Juve right now are 10 points behind Napoli, who are in the lead. Stunning. So look, you know, a couple of things. On the day Lukaku was sold, I thought Juve became the overwhelming favorites in Serie A. Now, I was pretty high on Inter still being really good, but I thought Juve were the overwhelming favorites. Granted, they still had Ronaldo on that day. Then Ronaldo leaves. So yeah, that and obviously the way they've been playing. And again, One thing that I don't think there's really much correlation between Ronaldo scoring a ton of goals and Man United and Juve struggling. I don't think Juve would be doing great with Ronaldo, but granted, he would be bailing them out here and there more. But back to the question on Allegri and Juve. From Juve's perspective, I think the train of thought with Allegri was like, you know what? Had we never parted ways with Allegri and never gone to Sarri and Pirlo, the Scudetto streak would have probably never ended. We wouldn't have had all this chaos and drama. We would have been Juve as we were in years past. I think that was the thought process. And we're like, you know what? Let's just bring Allegri back and it wouldn't have been like it was before. To me, though, the problem with that is that Juve is in a very different position than both when Allegri was first hired. So when Conte left and he left a really good squad and they went to the Champions League final the season after, although people thought the sky was falling without Conte. And they're also in a very different position than when Allegri left. Remember, when Allegri left, they lost to Ajax in the Champions League, which was, you know, a big upset because we could still consider Juve like a serious contender for the Champions League. When they were eliminated by Ajax, it was really pretty shocking. And you thought Juve had a chance to maybe go all the way. Now I think there's no one who would put Juve as a contender for the Champions League. And I think that was true even when Ronaldo was on the team. I don't think there's anyone that was like, hey, Juve are in the mix for that. So to me, they're in a very different position. And the question is Allegri really the right guy to oversee a rebuild? You know, Alex, the analogy I've used a million times, a manager like Conte takes you from A to B, yeah. And then a manager like Allegri takes you from B to C. On an established team that is doing really well, but you want to kind of take the extra step, I think Allegri's superb, just superb. But I just don't know if he's the guy for a rebuild. And we're also seeing, you know, De Ligt, Chiesa. I've really kind of lost hope for Kulusevski at Juve. So the question is he the right guy? So is Juve starting to think that way? I'm not sure. But for Allegri, talk about this really could impact his brand big time. Let's say the season really goes south and Juve finishes like sixth or seventh, something like that. Think about what hit that takes to his brand, because he was known, oh, this great manager. And you look even the communication. This is something we've always really praised Allegri a ton for, being like a master communicator. And some of the stuff he said has been, you know, pretty interesting. So I have to say right now, I don't think either are particularly happy reuniting. Granted, a lot can change. It's the beginning of the season. I remember the year that Pogba had the 10 jersey, Juve was off to a dreadful start, and then they won the Scudetto. But I just don't know if they're in that spot now. I think if you polled almost any Juve fan and you ask them, you can sign right now for fourth place and getting bounced in the round of 16 of the Champions League, I think Juve fans would take it. Just the guarantee of getting back to the Champions League. That's what it's gone to. So, yeah. But I think right now, Allegri, also, if things really go bad at Juve, you know, does that take him off the table for like huge, huge jobs down the road? And before he went back to Juve, you know, there's plenty of reports and he said it that Real Madrid were interested. I wonder if that would have changed after this. So great stuff. Now, before we get to Mark Doyle and first our patron segment of our dear friend Thousand Names, we had a lot of great games in Serie A. We have more coming this weekend. Two games really, really stand out, and I saw you picked them. So let's get to it. First game, Juve hosting Sampdoria. Thousand has it 1-1. Goals by De Ligt and Caputo. He says Cuadrado is going to miss a penalty. He says D'Aversa is going to destroy Allegri by playing his Catenaccio style. He says Candreva is better than Chiesa and that Juve can kiss goodbye to Scudetto. In Italian, Juve Samp 1-1. De Ligt Caputo, Cuadrado sbaglia rigore. D'Aversa asfalta Allegri con suo stile di gioco Catenacciaro. Candreva meglio di Chiesa. Addio Scudetto. I'm going to give Juve a win. Sampdoria has been okay, but I think that comeback against Spezia, which was not a good game for Juve, I think is going to energize. So I'm going to go 1-0, and I'll give a goal to Morata, who usually starts the season pretty strong, and he's been playing well for them. So I'm going to go there. I'll read it in Italian. Deli Quadrado sbaglia rigore, da Versa asfalta Allegri col suo stile di gioco catenacciaro, che andrava meglio di Chiesa, Dio Scudetto. Let's go to the huge game before the derby, and that's Inter hosting Atalanta. Thousand has Inter winning 2-1. Goals by Çalhanoğlu, Zeko, Gerson. I got a chuckle that today Çalhanoğlu had a quote in the paper saying that Milan fans had a lot of affection for him. Good luck with that on Twitter, buddy. But Thousand Names has given you some love on this show. And he says, Simone Inzaghi never loses against Gasperini. Oh, now that I think about it, Lazio were one of Gasperini's tough teams. And he says there'll be spectacular football at San Siro, and that Skriniar is going to cancel Zapata, if you remember, was linked to Inter in Italian. Inter-Atalanta 2-1, Çalhanoğlu, Zeko, Gosens, Limone con Gasperini non perde mai. Calcio spettacolo San Siro, Skriniar, Cancella, Zapata. Now, it's a great point on Simone Inzaghi. The other thing is I remember last season, Gasperini, how cautious he was when he played Inter at San Siro in a game there. Not the typical Atalanta. Curious to see how this one goes. Atalanta have been a little bit better. Inter at home have been sensational. I'm going to go draw, though. I'm going to go 1-1. I'll go Lautaro, and I'll go Zapata in this game. That's a really good one that I'm looking forward to. Then next up, Lazio-Roma. In Thousand's defense, he sent me this before Pellegrini was suspended in the game. So we're going to give him a break because he sent me these yesterday. His prediction for the derby is Roma winning 2-0, goals by Tammy and Pellegrini. Again, we didn't know when he sent this that Pellegrini would be suspended. And he says Mourinho is going to put the church back in the center of town, which is a saying in Italy. He says Sarri is going to be mocked for his old age. Even Allegri will be celebrating this win because of Sarri's loss, I guess. In Italian, Lazio-Roma 0-2, Abraham Pellegrini, Mourinho rimette la chiesa al centro del villaggio, Sarri preso per il culo per la sua vecchiaia, anche Allegri festeggia. Tough blow for Pellegrini being out for Roma. Lazio have not looked good. I watched yesterday Torino-Lazio. I have to say you see Juric's imprint on Torino much more than Sarri's at Lazio. The squad doesn't feel really that built for Sarri quite yet. Roma did win yesterday, but they really struggled in the second half. So I'm going to go 1-1, and I will give a goal to Tammy and a boring goal to Immobile. So great stuff. Thank you, Thousand Names. As always, before we get to Mark Doyle, which I think you'll really, really enjoy, let's get to our patrons. As always, if you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. We'll answer all your questions. We also have an episode on Tuesday just for patrons. Once a month, we have Napoli Outsider, and then we also have a tier with articles as well, and we donate the proceeds of the podcast after we pay everyone that contributes to a great charity called the Insuperabili in Italy. I know you guys must be tired of hearing me say how excited I am to welcome the next guest, because I really am every time. And of course I am today with my good friend, Mark Doyle. I feel like I have two Irish brothers, an older one, Phil Brown at Beyond the Pitch. And Mark is my younger Irish brother. And we've been fortunate enough to go to Italy with all our guests on Friday. We've been going a lot to Milano, and today we're going to Bologna, one of the most underrated cities in Italy. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Mark, he is the deputy features editor at Goal. Always has some fantastic articles, not just Serie A. He covers European football brilliantly. Really, really a top-notch writer and a great guest on the pod. So, Mark, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Grazie, grazie mille. No, yeah, I'm delighted to be back. It's always so much fun chatting culture with you. So thanks for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
So last year, Mark, we gave you a promotion. We made you our Atalanta correspondent. there was a lot of great candidates, but you won. And so I definitely want to talk to you about Atalanta because we haven't had a deep dive on them, and we'll get that at the end. But because I haven't chatted on air with Mark for a while, I figured we'd talk a little bit big picture of the season. So let's start here. Mark, obviously this summer we had a lot of significant departures player-wise. Ronaldo right at the end, but there was quite a few there. We had all these great managers and interesting positions there. I have to say I've really enjoyed the games. It feels like Serie A, there's always drama, fun at the games. So I have to say, despite the departures, I have really enjoyed the season. And I think, you know, and we'll get into with the other questions. There's definitely some interesting storylines. But give me your big picture. I'm curious, you, when you think of this season so far, what jumps out at you? And are you enjoying watching the games as much as I am?
Yeah, no, I'm the exact same, David. I have to say, I'm loving it. I really am. I think it's been a cracking start to the season, full of intrigue and excitement, and badly needed for the kind of reasons you alluded to there. I think after the high of the Euros, when this country, even as an Irishman, I thought I was doubly happy when Italy beat England in the final of the Euros. I was absolutely ecstatic after that. But the country was buzzing, and I think you then had like one success after another. During the summer for Italy on an international level, extended into the Olympics and beyond. And then we kind of got to the end of the transfer window. And as you say, you know, Ronaldo was the kind of last to go, but there was kind of one major departure after another. And I think Italian football fans were maybe a little bit deflated. And the way I was looking at it was, you know, if you were to pick a team of last season, we probably lost about half that team, you know, with Lukaku, Hakimi, Romero, Ronaldo, DePaul, you know. So these were kind of really, really devastating departures for the league. You know, at the end of the day, we're all, you know, no matter what team you support in Italy or who you follow, we're all kind of fans of Italian football in general. So it was kind of a little bit dispiriting to see these guys leave. And you know, that it hammered home the realization that, you know, Italy can't really compete with the Premier League and PSG anymore. So, you know, there was that kind of little bit of deflation. But, you know, since the season's got underway, it's been fantastic. And as you said, I was really enthused by all the managers. I'd argue that Serie A now has the most interesting lineup of managers in the top half of the table in any of the big five leagues in Europe. So I think that's fascinating stuff. Just watching press conferences and post-match interviews, yeah, and pre-match press conferences is fantastic. And I don't just mean Jose Mourinho there, who's obviously a master of media manipulation and getting the press and the fans on his side. Like, he's been fantastic. But it's just been really, really interesting in general. And had so many interesting storylines as well. I mean, Ronaldo leaving obviously is kind of the poster boy of Serie A, but as Allegri said afterwards, you know, life goes on and Serie A has gone on, and it's been really exciting. It's really exciting at the top half of the table. And you know what, to sum it up, I'm looking at the fixture list every weekend and I'm looking at it going, oh my God, that's going to be a fascinating game. So I think that's a really good reflection of where we're at the moment. And yeah, my big take on the season so far would be just summed up by renewed optimism. I think that's the phrase I keep going back to at the moment, because I'm enjoying pretty much every game right now.
Love it. Well said. Yeah, you're right. It's not just Mourinho. Even just look, you know, Sarri at Lazio, back to being himself, yeah, already got a 2-game ban for being quite vulgar. I mean, I should laugh at what he said, but you know what I mean. You're right. The managerial, the press conferences itself are fascinating, and then the games are totally living up to that. So let's start talking about the top teams. So Inter, especially at home, have been unbelievable. And I thought even the Real Madrid game that they lost, I thought they showed a lot. Now, I have to say, I was not as pessimistic as most when Lukaku left, because I still saw a really good team there. But I have to say, even I'm a little, as someone who was more optimistic than pretty much everyone I knew about Inter when he was sold, I'm surprised at how good they are. Do you agree? Did you expect them to be anywhere near as dominant as they've been?
No, I didn't. And you have to give them credit for that. I did try and write a piece before the Madrid game saying, you know, things are not as bad as they looked a month ago. I understand what it was, you know, as you quite correctly pointed out, there was a lot of pessimism. There was a lot of, you know, devastation after the Lukaku left, and the kind of manner of that departure, and people were obviously asking God, if we'd sold Lukaku, if he was going to leave anyway because he wanted to go back to Chelsea, maybe we could have held on to Hakimi, you know. And you look at him and the way he's playing with Paris Saint-Germain, and you're kind of thinking, my God, they've lost one of the best attacking right wing backs in the world. I don't think anyone would dispute that now, given his form. He's probably been PSG's best player in the first half of the season. And then you lose your coach as well, who kind of, you know, picked the club back up and did this incredible job of getting everyone together, and in difficult circumstances with all the financial issues with Sonning and that kind of thing going on in the background, and they won the league and they won it at a canter. So, I mean, we obviously had doubts about it, but as you say, I mean, several members of that Scudetto winning team were still there, you know, so I suppose we should have expected them to do well, but credit where it's due. I think Inzaghi has done a really good job since he's come in, obviously aided by the fact that he played a pretty similar formation to the previous coach, his predecessor, Conte. But they've picked up some good signings as well. I think Dzeko, a lot of people were probably uninspired by that signing, but I think he's shown that he's got plenty left in the tank. I think Correa is a bit of a wild card, at least Inzaghi knows inside out, and he could yeah, as he's even shown in Argentina, he could form a nice partnership with Lautaro as well. So, Marotta has worked a bit of magic in the transfer window as well, with the likes of Dumfries. Looks like a really good signing as well. So, I didn't expect them to. I don't think I expected them to hit the ground running. I thought that they're definitely going to be a challenger. I certainly wasn't one of those people who thought they're going to fall away and they won't even challenge for the Champions League. I thought they were genuine top four material. But I've been really impressed. And actually, you mentioned it. You touched on it there. I was actually probably most impressed with how they played against the Madrid team that's flying in La Liga and is scoring a lot of goals. And I thought at times Inter battered them and kind of for about 60 minutes, I thought their intensity was incredible and really impressive. And I thought really, really unlucky to lose that game. And that gave me a lot of heart. And I kind of thought, okay, Inter have lost a couple of, let's face it, two key components of that title winning team. But are still playing well and are still playing with a nice level of intensity. And in my opinion, I think they're only going to improve. The other thing I'd say is, well, there's still a lot of young guys on that team who have yet
to peak.
And I'm looking at someone like Barella, and I know we've talked about before, I absolutely adore the guy and the way he played. I think even he could go to another level over the course of next season as well. So there's serious grounds for, you know, optimism there regarding Inter. It's probably taken us all by surprise, and maybe they'll have to struggle. I don't want to say at all that they're not going to miss a guy like Lukaku. You know, we're already seeing the impact he's making at Chelsea. He adds another dimension to the attack. He can carry an attack, let's face it, on his own at times. So, again, Hakimi, I'm really, really disappointed to see him go. I think this is probably coming across already. I thought he was, you know, one of the stars of Serie A, and I just thought, you know, you're telling everybody, this is one of the best right backs in the world, and you know, Serie A skeptics are telling me, oh, well, he's only doing it over there because, you know, it's not the same standard as the Premier League, all this kind of rubbish. The guy's absolutely top quality. So, again, I thought Inter would really miss him, but they're coping remarkably well. And I think it's going to continue. I think they're going to have a real crack at defending that title, which is great. After a pretty dark summer, the future is kind of looking bright again for Inter. And that's down to Marotta and Inzaghi and the players. So, credit to them where it's due, you know?
Absolutely. Look, I said this last week. I don't think Inter are as good as last season, talent-wise, but there's a scenario where they have a better season than last season. If I had to bet, I think they will, because I think they are the favorites for the Scudetto, and I think they are going to get out of the group in the Champions League. So that in and of itself would already be a better season, despite the fact that I don't think they're quite as good as last season. But as you said, it's not just Dzeko, Correa, and Dumfries. You can also bank on Barella, and look at Skriniar, who got so much better at the three at the back defense. Like, they do have a Lautaro. There is a world where they can even be on paper as good. Okay, well, you're not going to become our Inter correspondent, but you made a really good case to try to become it. So let's move to Milan. I have to say, this is one team that I wasn't as optimistic going into the season, and they've really, really surprised me. I didn't have them in the top four, and they're without a doubt now, I feel like I was definitely wrong about them. I think they are, especially when I look at the state of some other teams, that they should actually really be taken seriously for the Scudetto. Do you agree with that assessment, or do you think we're overreacting to a fast start, which, let's be honest, with Pioli is not unheard of?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point, actually. I hadn't considered that. But no, I think I was really impressed with them again in their first Champions League match. I know they lost at Anfield, but I thought their mentality shone through there. I thought the way they hung in there, I think a lot of teams in Europe would have been completely overwhelmed by Liverpool, you know, when they're playing at that intensity at Anfield. I thought they could have been swept away. They were in danger of doing it, obviously. And then the missed penalty made a big impact on the game and kind of allowed Milan to turn it. But again, I was impressed with how they counterattacked. I was impressed with how they stuck in there. They kept going right until the end. And I thought, you know what? They're not quite at that level yet. We know that. We knew that beforehand. I was a bit like you. I wasn't sure. I think there's always this doubt in Milan is that can they sustain it? And when last season, we didn't think they could sustain this good as a challenge, and they kind of faded away towards the end of the season. But again, it was about squad depth. And to me, I look at Milan as a kind of side that are a club almost that are in transition, but they're ahead of schedule. And I think you got to give them again credit for that, because we didn't expect them to be challenging for the title, and they put it up to. And again, we're going into this season thinking, well, can they do it again? Are they still going to be relying on the likes of Ibrahimovic, and they're bringing in Giroud, and there's older guys, and there's also, you know, on the flip side of that, so many of them are young guys. But I'm enjoying watching them so far this season. I mean, a lot will depend on the fitness of the key guys. I don't think they have the strength and depth of some of their title rivals. But again, I'm loving Rebic's form at the moment. He's a guy I really enjoy watching. Like, I think he's got so much to his game. I think Brahim Diaz looks ready to explode, or, you know, at the very least, help fill the void left by Hakan, who's obviously so integral to Milan's success. Sandro Tonali looks like he's going to have a huge second season after struggling a little bit last year. You know, understandably, the young guy going to such a massive club. Again, really, really happy to see him doing well. He's such a talented kid, and if he prospers at Milan, I think that's great for them, and it's great for Italy as well. Tomori, it looks like he's gone from strength to strength. And then in Mike Maignan, they look like they have seriously cushioned the blow of losing Donnarumma. So, not an easy summer for Milan in that sense, and have responded well and have hit the ground running. So, again, there are weaknesses in that squad. We know that, but I think Milan, what they're doing is really, really impressive. And I'm delighted to see it. I'm delighted to see them back up there, because, again, no matter who you support, I think it's a fantastic thing for Italian football in general when you have a strong Milan. I love to see all of Serie A's big clubs, the Sette Sorelle or whatever, growing and improving. I think many of them are right now, and I think Milan are falling to that bracket.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking? This is probably especially true right around Lukaku when he was sold. I was like, okay, Juve has Allegri back. They are probably going to get back on track. But we were always saying, oh, we need the two Milan clubs to be back. And this summer, between Donnarumma and then Lukaku, Hakimi, you were like, huh, I wonder if the Milan clubs are on the decline and Juve is going to go on another run for the titles. And that's not at all what's, and it's very early. Like, things could really change, but that's not the case at all. So, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about Juve. Because, look, you know, I have to say, watching them, I'm starting to think, geez, maybe Sarri deserves a lot more credit winning a Scudetto with kind of a this scenario. And I'm not saying Juve should have Sarri now. I don't think it was a good fit back then. But I have to say, I was like, maybe he deserves a little bit more credit for that. So I'm surprised that, A, Allianz Stadium, Juve Stadium is no longer a fortress. It used to be that you would assume them at home are going to win, you know, 90% of the time in Serie A, and they're not. Yeah. But even more concerning would be the defense. Like, I think they've given up a goal in Serie A in, like, 19 games in a row dating back to last season. And, of course, they have Bonucci and Chiellini, who are coming off the great Euro. And they have De Ligt, who, you know, is one of the most visible players in Serie A. So are you surprised by how much they're struggling defensively with Allegri back?
100%, David. I mean, for all the reasons you've listed there, when you think of how, okay, I know the guys, you know, they're in the mid-30s, Chiellini and Bonucci, and you're just, but they were absolutely immense for Italy at the Euros. And you're thinking, okay, Juve are pretty stacked in the centre of defence. As you said, there's a lick there as well. And to see them in such a bad way, I mean, we knew there were issues at Juve, the deep-rooted issues. And I don't think, you know, it wasn't all just about Ronaldo leaving or anything like that. There's no way. I mean, he left for a reason at the end of the day as well. So And again, it's a really good point you bring up about the, you know, 19 games without keeping a clean sheet. That goes all the way back to March as well. So it's not like this has suddenly happened. It's not like, you know, this is all Allegri's fault somehow. Or, you know, this decline has been evident for quite some time. We've been watching them, as you say, losing very, very strange games at home against, you know, as we would have wanted to disrespect any clubs, but inferior opposition. And you're looking at as well someone like Szczęsny, who I thought was doing a very good job for a couple of seasons of replacing Buffon, and now he's up and down every single week. I never know what to expect from him. You know, and you kind of have that constant concern with Juve, which, as you said, even when it came to home games, but also just in general, like, you knew that if Juve went ahead, they were always going to hold on to the game, or they knew how they should have shot, or they knew how to see a game out. And Allegri's been very vocal about that, speaking publicly constantly about that. They don't seem to know how to do that anymore. And even he was taking the blame last weekend for some of the substitutions. I should have gone more defensively. I can't have as much faith in the back line as maybe in previous years. And I thought it was actually interesting when, you know, we would talk about the BBC and the great defence. And Andrea Barzagli was on, I think it was DAZN the other day, and he was talking about the fact that he saw a very nervous Allegri, which he was unused to seeing, and that a lot's changed in the last 2 years at Juve. And I think that's probably the big thing, is that Allegri wanted an overhaul 2 years ago before he left, and he didn't get it. You know, ultimately the club went in a very, very different direction with Maurizio Sarri. And he's come back to a very different squad and probably a very different club that, like, I don't think we should underestimate the impact that COVID has had in terms of the economic crisis that created.
Yeah.
You may are constantly going looking for capital now to balance the books. Luckily, they have, you know, the likes of Exor behind them and stuff like that. So it's not the same squad. And he clearly doesn't have a lot of faith in certain guys like Kulusevski. And he's questioning, he didn't question Chiesa and this kind of thing. And I'm such a big fan of Chiesa. And so it's an interesting scenario he's found himself in, that he doesn't seem to have. At the moment, he's basically looking at his squad, and it seems to be like he's going, okay, prove to me you're good enough to play for Juve. I mean, we saw that video going viral last week of,
yeah,
he's basically saying, you know, these guys want to play for Juve. It's just, he doesn't think they understand what it means to wear the shirt. So it's a fascinating scenario we find. And I did not expect this. I you know, they say you should never go back and, you know, reheat soup and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I did think that he would come in and he would bring a level of, you know, order and tranquility and restore some of the values and that kind of stuff. And, I you know, after it was a bit chaotic last season under Pirlo, you know, whether that was entirely his fault or not. But I think there's a general malaise there at Juve at the moment that needs to be addressed. And that can be normal after such a sustained period of success. But it's a very different, at the end of the day, it's a very different Juve to the one he left behind or the one he took over from after Conte. So it's a hell of a job he has on his hands, and I think they'll improve. Don't get me wrong; the quality is in the squad. They're not gonna. I don't think, you know, finish 10th in the table or anything like that. But he's got problems there to address, and it's not just about the coach at Juve. That would be my big argument. I think there are systemic issues, let's say.
Yeah. Look, that line that you said, I've been saying it a lot too. Juve is just in a very different position than when Allegri was first hired, for sure. And the Juve that he left was quite different. Yeah. I have to wonder if, you know, they figured Ronaldo was going to be there. Let's try to get one last season with him. But then they also gave Allegri a 4-year contract. And while Allegri was the perfect guy to come in after Conte with that squad, and I think the teams that he had, he made a lot of sense. But I'm not sure he's the right guy to oversee a rebuild. And Juve has said they want to get younger. Their payroll's been incredibly bloated. I think what you said about COVID is 100% accurate. So I couldn't agree more with your assessment of this. And I think Allegri is a really, really great coach. But he has to be also in the right situation, and I wonder if this is it. So let's talk about Ronaldo's goal production, because, look, a lot of Juve fans pointed to, well, you know, there were these games where we played better without Ronaldo, and then they pulled up the stats that in the seasons before Ronaldo arrived, it's not like Juve was scoring any less than they were with Ronaldo. But all that being said, I look at Juve and there's not one player that I'm like, this guy's definitely getting to even 12 goals, like maybe 12 goals, but like 15 in Serie A. I'm not sure they even have someone that definitely does that. So how, like, we talked about Juve having a leaky defense, but I don't think their attack's much of a guarantee either. And how he fits Dybala and Chiesa for me seems it's going to be interesting. So do you think they're going to come anywhere close to replacing the goal production that Ronaldo was bringing?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's a fascinating issue. I saw that, like as you mentioned there, I saw people, you know, bringing up the numbers from previous seasons. Again, I would go back to the fact that I look at the squads from those previous seasons. You're going back to, you know, teams that reached the Champions League final in 2017 or 2015. And I'm looking at the general strength of those starting 11s and particularly the midfield. And I don't see that level of creativity or level of strength or dynamism in those in the current setup. And it is an issue. As you say, like, if you were running through those guys, like Chiesa, who has so much time for, I think he's a fantastic player, and he proved that during the Euros. I think he's genuinely world-class. But you do have certain doubts over them in terms of how prolific they can be. Like Morata, for someone, is an incredibly perplexing player and has been for years and years and years. You know, you go back, you look at his spell at Chelsea and go back even in Spain, and you never really know if you can rely on him. Moise Kean, I believe, has so much talent, and could really explode. But again, we're waiting for him to take that next step, and that's on him now. You know, he talked about attitude issues in the past, and maybe now, you know, being a bit of a hothead and all that kind of stuff, and having to mature. And I thought he was good at PSG last season, so I do think it can happen for him. Dybala, again, I think is so much rests on him. And again, another strange player. When you see him getting debated over here, of like, so many people are big fans of Dybala, and then but they also have doubts of, can he carry this team? Can he carry the attack? And does he score enough goals? And is he contributing enough? So I do understand exactly what you're saying, that there are certain doubts over these guys, that if one of these guys going to hit 20 goals a season, or between them, can they hit 15 each or whatever, you know, and try and make up for the loss of Ronaldo? Because at the end of the day, again, I understand the issue with Ronaldo. It's like, you're talking about a guy who doesn't contribute very little defensively. You kind of have to build a team around an attack. And maybe that's the big failure of Juve over the last two seasons, is that they brought Ronaldo in to be the finishing touch, the last piece of the puzzle in terms of winning the Champions League. And they probably never really fully committed to building a team to feed him, to allow him to go. Yeah. Another cop between two stools now that he's gone, as you say, unexpectedly, right at the end of the window, leaving them in the lurch a little bit without an obvious prolific goal scorer. And the rumours we were hearing as well, up in Turin, where Allegri wasn't happy with, you know, the way that was handled, and the, you know, didn't get the replacements he wanted, and the money wasn't invested in the way that he had hoped or he had been promised. So it's an awkward situation. Like, Ronaldo, again, you know, every time I bring up Ronaldo, you know, particularly on Twitter, you know, which is, God, can be a toxic place at times, people think you're attacking him. You know, and my argument always was with Ronaldo, that the project, unfortunately timed also because of COVID, what happened there, nobody could have predicted it, you know, a pandemic it really did hit them hard and it affected the success of that project. But it didn't work out for them. And now it's been aborted prematurely. It's been, you know, 1 year before it was supposed to end, Ronaldo's out the door, and Juve are left with no goal scorer, no prolific guaranteed goal scorer, no guaranteed source of goals, and an unbalanced squad. So it's again, I wish I could answer all these questions, but as you say, there are question marks over the guys that are left behind. I don't doubt their potential or their talent or anything like that. But you are in a very difficult position now. They would love to be able to sign the next goal-scoring phenom, you know, someone like Haaland. But that's not even looking likely now for financial reasons, even if you could say they have a good relationship with Mino Raiola and that kind of thing. Again, it's Allegri said the other day that you know, we have to be careful. Players need to be taken out of their comfort zone. They have to work hard. They have to do this. They have to do that. Because if they don't, you know, it'll turn into a mess. But I'm looking at it, to be honest, at the moment, thinking this is a bit of a mess as it stands. You know, and if it's not the mess, it'll do until the real mess arrives, as the film set goes. But I don't think Ronaldo is their biggest problem. I do think they will score goals there. I think they have talent up front. I'm just worried about what's left behind them. And I look at that midfield, and I look at the defense now, it was creaking as well, and you just think, this isn't good. This doesn't bode well. So,
Agreed, for sure. Well said there. So we mentioned at the top, you know, all the big name players who left. The one team, the top team in Serie A, who didn't lose any starters was Napoli. And granted, you know, maybe people were hoping for a little bit more exciting transfer window. But when you look at the landscape in Serie A, already bringing everyone back, and you could make, I think most people would agree that Napoli underachieved last season. That they were a very nice outside pick. When I saw they were 12-1 to win the Scudetto, I was like, that's great value right there.
Yeah.
So I see them as clearly better than Roma and Lazio. Maybe Roma's closer to them. Do you agree with that assessment? Do you see Napoli as a notch above those two? Because I think they can be a serious challenger to Milan and Inter in that scenario for the Scudetto.
Yeah, no, definitely. They looked the part so far. As you mentioned earlier on, it's very early days. We don't want to jump to conclusions or be prisoners at the moment, as you often put it so brilliantly. But there's no doubt the talent has always been there. You know, I think I've been on the show before defending Gattuso because, when he came in, and I thought he did a very good job in very difficult circumstances at Napoli, won the Coppa Italia and all that kind of thing. But you know, you did always add at the end, they need to get into the Champions League, and they blew it at the end of last season. There's absolutely no way they should have failed to qualify to finish in the top four last season. And I think I can understand that, you know, then why a change was made, given there had already been tension. And you're right, arguably they shouldn't have even been in that position because of the players they had. They did underachieve. I wouldn't dispute that whatsoever. And I think the big thing for them this summer, and you know, Spalletti was kind of joking about chaining himself to the likes of Koulibaly and several other players, but they just wanted to hold on to players. They just wanted to make sure that they didn't lose the kind of key parts of the squad. And we're seeing now why. You know, it wasn't a squad that needed a huge amount of new signings. It kind of makes me think of Liverpool in England, where they kind of thought, look, if we can get everybody fit and firing, we have a squad that's capable of fighting for the title. And we're seeing the start of a sustained title challenge this season. And I look at the first 11 and I see quality all over the place. And I look at Victor Osimhen as well. And we've mentioned this.
Love him.
We've mentioned this before. This guy, he's seriously, seriously talented. He has everything I think required to tear it up, not only in Italy, but in Europe. And again, it was great to see him against Leicester last week doing that in the Europa League. He's had his ups and downs. He's had, you know, all sorts of missteps, and he's been unfortunate at the same time as well. But this guy adds a whole other dimension to that Napoli team, and that I think they were crying out for years. Such a focal point to add to the attack, and such pace and penetration. So if this guy, you know, really takes off this season, then you have a guy capable of doing a Lukaku, you know, and kind of a title challenge. So I've been impressed with Roma. I think Sadi will do good work at Lazio, no doubt about that. But I do, if I'm, you know, ranking title challenger, Napoli are the one. And if I'm working at Milan or Inter, or, you know, but Napoli are the one I'd be watching with serious interest. They're the ones. That's the team I'd be very, very wary of when it comes to, you know, fight for the title.
Yeah, and I love that. Like me, you adore Osimhen. Like, if I had to pick the player who at the end of this season is going to be the most expensive Serie A player on the market, he'd be my answer. I think Chiesa could be right there with him, but Osimhen's just really, really terrific. If he becomes just a little bit more clinical with his finishing, I mean, that guy's just going to be completely unstoppable. Okay, get to Atalanta, which I'm excited, I've been very impressed with Fiorentina. You know, usually they always get hyped going into the season, but I think this is the one time that the hype was deserved. I'm not sure they can sneak into top four just because I just don't see them quite on that level, but they are a dangerous team. What do you make of them so far, and what do you think their ceiling is this season?
Yeah, I think everybody's kind of been really kind of taken with them so far this season. The game against Inter was, you know, kind of slipped away from them and somewhat self-destructive at the end. But again, even in that game, they showed what they're all about. It's an exciting, high-energy side. And at the moment, they're one of the best sides to watch in Serie A so far this season, in a season that's actually been really quite exciting. And Vincenzo Italiano is obviously getting so much craze at the moment, and rightly so. I think people are really bigging him up. Oh, again, we don't want to get too carried away. I know it's an easy mistake for us all to make when we look at him so much, and when you see these things being done so well and in such an exciting fashion, it's hard not to get carried away. But I'm enthused by them. Yeah, like you, I'm not sure if they can challenge for the top four. I mean, obviously they've got an excellent centre forward in Vlahovic. There's talented guys there. You know, Holmgren Milenkovic was fantastic. Castrovilli is a good player. Even Nico Gonzalez is really, really interesting signing. So I understand the enthusiasm and the excitement around them at the moment. I think they made some mistakes in the past. In terms of coaches, and we're seeing that now because I think they've got the right man in place this time around, and he's making the most of what is quite an interesting and quite an exciting squad. So yeah, I don't want to make any bold predictions, but the one thing I will say is that this is a team to watch this season. So I'm not going to say they're going to finish in the top four. I said when I talked about fixture lists earlier on, I'm looking at Fiorentina games now going, I think I might go out on my way to sit down and watch that game, or I'm looking forward to them going up against one of the big boys, you know? So, and also the other thing I would say, it's fantastic again to see Fiorentina, you know, looking like the Fiorentina we all knew and loved, let's say, from our youth, and that a team that you had to go and watch, you know? And it's such a great place to go and watch football. And I'm really excited, and I'm really, I'm like you, we've been burned before, let's say, with Fiorentina, but Fingers crossed this time, because it could be a really an exciting project, and it could really take off. So yeah, I'm on board with Italiano, and I hope it really goes well for them this season. I'd love to see them get into the Europa League or something like that. I think it'd be fantastic for the club.
Awesome. Okay, let's get to Atalanta, and I've been very excited to talk to you about it because actually we haven't even chatted offline, so I'm very curious to get your thoughts on them. So all summer, you know, I do a patron show with my friend Napoli Outsider. We were looking out the window, and all summer we looked how a lot of the top teams were getting weaker, at least on paper, although we've seen Inter and Milan maybe not so much so far, but on paper, so many teams getting weaker. And we were like, you know, this is a really good opportunity here for Atalanta to try to go all in. They were in strong financial shape, low payroll, Champions League 3 years in a row. So let me ask you, when you look at their transfer window, do you think they made the most out of the opportunity to maybe go all in and try to steal a title? And if you had to give them a grade for their transfer window, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, nobody I'm going to go back to Jose Mourinho when they asked him if he was happy with his transfer window, and he said nobody's happy with their squad at this stage of the season, well, except for Pochettino at PSG. And I kind of think, okay, you know, nobody is ever 100% happy with their business, but I think Atalanta have done really well. If I was going to grade it, I'd say B+ or something like that, because I think I thought goalkeeper was an issue. I think it's something we've touched on before in previous conversations, and I think Musso is an excellent signing in that regard. I know from speaking to people up there as well, they're really excited about the fact that they brought in Lovato from Verona. They think he's going to really do well. They made massive money. I mean, I'm not just looking at, obviously, if you're evaluating a transfer window, you don't just look at, you know, the ins, but also the outs. Like, they made a massive profit on Christian Romero as well, which is, again, obviously, he was fantastic last season. Again, another thing we've discussed previously. Phenomenal at the backs for Atalanta, but Demiral, if he was to, you know, deliver on the potential that we know he had, I mean, remember a couple of seasons ago, raving about him at Juventus, it could be another great sign. And so, could they have done more maybe here and there? But I mean, I'm looking at it again. I kind of think Atalanta have come out of this transfer window with a strong squad relatively still intact. I was worried that they were going to lose the path at one point.
When Inter were looking for
a replacement
Lukaku
for
Lukaku.
That would have concerned me, to be honest, David. I would have thought, okay, now you're losing kind of serious strength and depth of front, because it's such an advantage for them that they have both he and Luis Muriel as well. So again, one or two extra boys, maybe to strengthen the squad, give a bit more depth? Yes, probably, but I think they've done good business. And I know a lot of people were pessimistic saying, can they sustain it? Can they keep going for yet another season? I mean, they're overachieving to such an incredible extent, but you know, after a patchy enough kind of first couple of games, I mean, they're in not in a bad position again. So I'm optimistic. Yeah, I think the window has done them a few favors, and as you've said, particularly because other teams have been hurt, whereas they've actually, I'd argue, strengthened a little bit. So I'm expecting another strong chance for the top four, to be honest.
You know, shame on me for constantly forgetting about Lovato. And I said shame on me because he came through Padova's youth system. And I keep forgetting about him because he's essentially replacing Caldara. And the Caldara we saw the second go around at Atalanta wasn't much. Mm. So good upgrade. So when I ask the next question, I guess I should have thrown him into the mix. So we were talking earlier about, you know, big teams losing at least one key player. You mentioned Romero. They made a big profit on him. I thought Romero last season was really sensational. I didn't expect he had this in him. But yeah, like you said, they upgraded keeper. They bring in Musso. So let's look at it this way. Do you think upgrading from Golini to Musso and then going from Romero to Demiral, which on paper is a downgrade, do you think that's kind of a wash? And we can throw in Lovato, which, again, shame on me for not mentioning him earlier. So flat out, do you kind of feel like Atalanta's back line with the keepers about the same as last season? You think it's slightly worse? Do you think there's a scenario where they might even be a little bit better?
Yeah, good question. I'm a massive fan of Musso. I think this was a guy that I you know, even the likes of Inter were looking at. So I think he is an upgrade. With all respect to Golini, I do think he's, over the course of the season, I think it's going to be, he could help them out. You know, maybe they'll pick up, you know, four more points because of him. I really do think he's a very good shot stopper. And I think that's evidenced by the fact that he's in the Argentina squad now. That was always an area I was a little bit concerned of when it came to Atalanta. Obviously, at the end of the day, Atalanta play in such a fashion that the goalkeeper is always going to be worked. We know that they go because of the way they go 1v1 at the back. Romero, I agree with. I mean, the guy was sensational, as you say, last season. He was absolutely fantastic. He went to a whole other level. I can understand why people were coming forward with such, you know, money, you know, big bids for him. I know there was Barcelona were interested as well, but obviously never in a million years would they have had the money for him. But again, he was absolutely phenomenal. You talked to our correspondents in Argentina as well, and they were raving about him at the Copa America. The fact that I think he only played about 3 or 4 games, but he made the team of the tournament. They were absolutely couldn't believe the development and the improvement he'd made over the previous 12 months. So he is a loss. I wouldn't paper over that. Whether Demiral can set up, as you say, it is a downgrade in that sense. But again, we've seen time and time again with Atalanta that they can bring in guys, and if they're suited to the system and if they have the right attitude and mentality, sometimes they can go pear-shaped, obviously. But if they do come in, they can improve, you know, kind of exponentially as the season goes over from working with Gasperini. So I'm hoping that he does prove a good replacement. And we know he has potential. We know he was highly rated. Remember a couple of years ago they were talking about how he was doing better than De Ligt at Juventus. So
yeah,
let's see how it goes. I'm optimistic, but yeah, there are no guarantees in that one. But the Musso one, yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. I think that's a great bit of business as far as I'm concerned. I didn't expect Atalanta to get him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And look, you know, I feel like Atalanta have really spoiled us. And we're recording this before a few games take place today. But right now, Atalanta's in fourth place. And everyone's saying how bad of a start they are off to. So look, they've kind of spoiled us a little bit. And I know usually with Gasperini, they always start slow. And when I look at this team, I was like, I know at some point they're going to win 10 out of 12 or go on their run. So I'm excited for you. So let's close on this. And Mark is always really fantastic. I had a blast chatting with you. Last season, we had a couple of players. We talked about Romero taking a huge leap. We saw Piscina playing so well that Atalanta really didn't miss Papu Gomez at all. And then Mele, I thought, was one of the shrewdest signings in all of January. And he had a superb Euro as well. When you look at their squad, are there some players that you think are going to kind of the same way surprise us this season, the way those three did last campaign?
Yeah, I mean, as you pointed out, they really are known for it. Like that guys can arrive kind of unheralded and then just go to a whole other level. I mean, looking at the squad, you know, one of the guys they brought in during the summer, Zappacosta, is an interesting one because never really did anything at Chelsea, and got his goal the other night as well. So I'm intrigued to see how he goes and see what he has left, because I think it would, you know, when the likes of Inter were being linked with him, a lot of fans I knew, Inter fans, Interisti, were very, very underwhelmed by that. But I'm wondering, now that he's back at Atalanta, could he do okay? So he's going to be one I'm going to watch closely. In terms of guys coming through, maybe have an impact, obviously already Roberto Piccoli, the centre forward,
yeah,
the dramatic late winner at Torino. You know, a great story, the latest academy product to break through. So he's kind of one that, I mean, it's not easy to break into that Atalanta attack we were just mentioning, Duván Zapata and Luis Muriel earlier, and Neven Ilicic and all these guys. So not easy to break into that team. But just capped by the Italy under-21, really highly rated. They're really excited about him. So again, he said he's already made his presence felt with that goal against Torino. So he's one I'd definitely be looking at. Also, having spoken to a couple of the guys that really follow closely the Atalanta, the youth team up there, the Primavera, they told me Shaku Omar, a Swedish attacker, and they were maybe hopeful that they might have another kind of Kulusevski situation on their hands there at the very least. And Giorgio Scalvini, a teenage defender who's impressing, that they're really excited about as well. So they're still in the Primavera, those last two, but there's talk is that they're really, really excited about them, and if they don't make the breakthrough this season, potentially next season. So again, what I draw from all this is that this conveyor belt of talent that Atalanta have in the academy, and also this fantastic talent that they have for picking up players, their recruitment strategy, it seems to be continue. Whether their run of Champions League qualification will continue, I don't know, but I really hope it does, because I think, as you know, and he's calling me the unofficial Atalanta correspondent for the show. I mean, I just have so much time for how they run the club and how they play football, and I think they should be a model for not only every club in Italy, but several clubs in Europe in terms of how to go about your business, because what they're doing is ridiculous. They're overachieving to an incredible extent. So they give me hope in a football world which is full of a lot of negativity. I always see Atalanta as a source of positivity, and I feel that should always be championed.
So well said. And I have to say, some people in Italy who really know the games have been telling me really look out for Piccoli, that he could really be something. So interesting there. Well, someone who is always something is Mark. Absolutely awesome chat on Calcio. He's not just great on the pod. His articles are truly great. He had one recently on Juve, Ronaldo, Allegri, the Donnarumma regret. A lot of really great stuff. I also love the way Mark covers European football. You guys know that I focus more on Serie A, but when I want to read more about what's going on elsewhere, Mark is always one of my guys. So, Mark, I'm so glad we did our first chat of the season. Look forward to doing more. In the meantime, keep up all the great work at Goal, and thanks so much for doing this.
Thanks very much, David. You're far, far, far too kind, but I really appreciate it. Thanks. And always a pleasure to be on the show. Legend. Cheers.